Warning: this episode contains details that some listeners may find disturbing. A profane message, scrawled in lipstick across the torso of a woman lying in a lot on the west side of Los Angeles, was found on the cold morning of February 10th, 1947. The message read, "Fuck you, BD," signed Tex. Just 3 weeks earlier, the press had dubbed another gruesome homicide the Black Dahlia. And now an equally brutal crime confronted the city. The victim, Jean French, and her case became known as the Red Lipstick Murder. Who killed her? What did the message on her torso really say? And is the case related to the Black Dahlia? This is a study of Strange. Welcome back to the show. I am your host, Michael May. The Red Lipstick Murder. This is a fascinating unsolved case. It's probably most well known today because it inspired a storyline in the video game L.A. Noire. So if anybody has played that, you might recognize a few details as you hear this story. This episode is a bit of a smaller one, just because I have been very busy lately on a number of projects, such as life. Everything always happens at once. But I do have some bigger episodes with some amazing guests planned before the end of the year. So make sure you're subscribed to stay tuned for those. Here is the story of Jean French. Jean Axford French began her life far from the glare of Hollywood. Born in Texas on October 6, 1902, she grew up in a large family that later moved to Oklahoma. She married her first husband, oilman David Yandel Rather, at 18, and gave birth to a son, David Jr., the same year. The marriage deteriorated, and Jean divorced Rather in 1924. And then she remarried briefly and continued working as a nurse until she eventually became interested in aviation. Now, it's hard to pinpoint when exactly this interest in flying happened. It could have come while she was working as a nurse in South America or beforehand. However, by the 1930s, she had earned her pilot's license, joined the Women's Air Reserve, and became a member of the 99 Club, an organization of female aviators. In October 1931, Jean married fellow pilot Curtis Bauer, but that relationship lasted barely 5 weeks. Over the next decade, she had a variety of jobs as a nurse, a stewardess, and occasional actress. Though I will point out, I cannot confirm that she worked as an actor, but it's usually always mentioned in accounts of her life, including newspaper accounts at the time. It's most likely, in my opinion, that if she worked in movies, she was likely just an extra or doing background work. In 1944, she married Frank French, a Marine veteran and an aircraft plant worker. But by 1947, just 3 years later, the marriage wasn't working. Jean was known to drink heavily, and both spouses accused each other of domestic violence. By early 1947, the couple had separated, each living in the Palms District of LA, which is on the west side of the city. At this point in her life, Jean was known by neighbors for bar hopping, going out every night, having a good time, and getting into arguments with her husband, Frank French. On Sunday, February 9th, 1947, Jean French drifted through West Los Angeles, perhaps looking for alcohol or for old friends or to hang out with new friends. And at 7:30 p.m., she had dinner at the Plantation Cafe with two unidentified men. A waitress later recalled that one of the men had a dark complexion and dark hair and a small mustache. Jean was also seen talking on a payphone and allegedly was overheard saying, "Don't bring the bottle, the landlady won't allow it." At 9:30 p.m., Jean stopped by Roy Fetcher's Drive-In Cafe on Santa Monica Boulevard and was seen by a number of people. Here's a quote from the Pasadena Star News. Police have a detailed description of a man with whom Mrs. French is believed to have eaten her last dinner, a waitress in a Culver City cafe, and Tony Anzioni, another employee of the place, identified pictures of Mrs. French as those of a woman who had dined there late Sunday night with a dark man wearing a small mustache. And just for clarification, when you hear the term dark man in that account, in other witness testimony, he's described as potentially being Spanish or Latino. So it's sort of a dark complexion man with a small mustache. By 10:30 p.m., Jean French was seen at a bar on Venice Boulevard. And then about a half hour later, around 11 p.m., she decided to visit her husband, Frank French, and they got into an argument. Here is a quote from the Los Angeles Times. Police said he first denied having seen his wife for the last several days. Later, he admitted she had gone to his Santa Monica room at 11 p.m., quarreled, and left at midnight. French said that during the quarrel, she struck him with her purse. Asked whether his wife had been drinking when she visited him at his Santa Monica quarters, French told police that she had. Asked whether he had been drinking, he said, "I had only three beers all day." That was the last time he saw her, police quoted him as saying. And then shortly after midnight, Jean was seen at the Piccadilly Drive-In on Washington Place with a medium-small, dark-complexioned man. By 1:30 a.m., she was seated at the first stool at the Pan American Bar, sipping a 7-High cocktail, which, if it's the cocktail I'm thinking of, I believe it's whiskey and 7-Up. The bar closed at 2 a.m., and roughly around the same time, there's allegations from people there that claim that Jean was seen fighting with this companion of hers before they got into an old sedan and drove off. I want to make a comment here, though, about her activities from 1:30 till the bar closed at 2. So essentially when she went to a drive-in and then was at this bar, I'm having a very tough time confirming those actions and those witness testimonies. Most of those details come from an article I found on Medium.com. And a lot of them seem to be taken from Steve Hodell's book. He's the author that wrote a book about his father potentially being a massive serial killer, including killing the Black Dahlia. Very well-known book. Great book. I own it. But there is a lot of confirmation bias in that book and a lot of details that he tends to kind of force into his own theory. As usual, when I have issues confirming things, if any listeners out there know more details or have evidence from these activities from about 1:30 until 2 for Jean French, email me, astudyofstrange@gmail.com. I would love to know more about this. Around 3:15 a.m., a night watchman saw someone abandon Jean's 1929 Ford Roadster in the parking lot of the Piccadilly Drive-In Theater. The night watchman told the police that a man, not Jean, had left the car there. And that brings us to 8:15 a.m. on Monday, February 10th. A bulldozer operator, Hugh C. Shelby, was heading to work near a new housing tract just off of Grandview Boulevard in West Los Angeles. In a vacant lot nicknamed The Moors, he noticed a heap of stylish women's clothing. Lifting a dew-covered red dress and a blue coat, he discovered the naked body of a dark-haired woman. Her face had been beaten beyond recognition, and her clothing and handbag had been neatly placed on top of her body. She, of course, was soon identified as Jean French. Medical examiners concluded that she had been hit on the head with a metal instrument, likely a socket wrench, but the blows were not fatal. The killer had stomped on her chest with such force that her ribs fractured and punctured her heart. Heel prints were still visible on her torso. The beating caused massive internal bleeding. And what's so just horrendous about this is that she was alive through most of this. However, she most certainly was unconscious during a lot of the torture.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at omahasteaks.com. That's omahasteaks.com and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
The most chilling detail and most famous detail of this case is, of course, the lipstick message written across her abdomen with the words, "Fuck you, BD," and below that text, like a signature. But there's a little problem that is commonly overlooked about this, including some well-known books that talk about this case. Many newspapers reported the initials as BD, and some claiming the phrase "fuck you" signed BD stands for, of course, the Black Dahlia, because that's on everybody's mind in Los Angeles at the time. However, the coroner later determined that the letters actually read PD, which likely stood for police department. The word "Tex" may have been a reference to the killer's name or nickname or origin. Unfortunately, we don't know. But when you do read about Jean French, and a lot of articles say, "fuck you, signed BD," as in Black Dahlia, that is incorrect. Regardless, this message, this crude message, was both a taunt and perhaps a signature of some kind. It's worth mentioning as well that there were a number of terrifying murders in Los Angeles in the 1940s, and they all started to get grouped together in the press, and they were called the werewolf murders. And I think that phrase isn't used as much anymore because a lot of these murders we know now aren't necessarily linked, like the Black Dahlia, to others, and perhaps even a case I've covered on the show, Georgette Bauerdorf. After Jean French's murder, the Herald Express rushed out a special edition with the headline, "Werewolf Strikes Again, Kills LA Woman, Writes BD on Body." Reporters soon called this crime the Red Lipstick Murder, and they speculated that the same killer who killed the Black Dahlia, Elizabeth Short, had struck again. Investigators were under enormous pressure, and they, of course, questioned Frank French, her husband, first. Police arrested him just weeks earlier for punching Jean during a drunken argument. And of course, as we've discussed, he did have a visit from Jean that night that she died, but he insisted that she left and he stayed home. Detectives administered a polygraph test, searched his house. Frank passed the lie detector test, and his landlady confirmed that he did not leave his apartment at all the night of the murder. Frank was a major interest in the case. He was investigated thoroughly, and many forums and articles and things about the Jean French murder today still list him as a prime suspect, and a lot of people believe that he likely did it. But he was soon dismissed for good reason, and that's there are shoe prints, footprints, left at the crime scene, and they were relatively small for a man's feet. Frank's feet were much larger. He had different shoes that didn't match the footprints, and of course didn't match the size. That, combined with the alibi, pretty much wrote him off, as well as other things that investigators came across. Jean French's 25-year-old son, David Rather, was also questioned about this. I don't believe he was a suspect. I think he was just questioned, hoping he might have information. And outside of the police station, he confronted his stepfather, Frank French, and said, "Well, I've told them the truth. If you're guilty, there's a God in heaven who will take care of you." Frank replied, "I swear to God, I didn't kill her." David later told reporters that his mother, quote, "made friends easy. She made a lot of her own trouble." And those comments, as well as more information that came to light about her life, shaped public perception of Jean as this hard-drinking, partying woman. LAPD detectives turned their attention to this dark-complexioned man that Jean had been seen with on the night that she died. No one knew who he was. None of the witnesses at the restaurants or bars knew who he was. The police called on the public's help to identify him. There were articles published in newspapers offering rewards and all things like that to help identify this man, and it was all for naught. The police were unable to identify this man. And then during a reinvestigation in the 1950s, detectives discovered that Jean shared a post office box with an unknown man, and she had been using her previous married name, Jean Thomas. However, investigators still couldn't figure out who this man was that shared the post office box and assumed it might be this dark complexioned man, but we may never know. Another promising lead emerged with a gentleman named George Witt, who is a painter who had done some work on the French's home, and he claimed that he had dated Jean a few times. And that night that she died, or at least soon after she died, he strangely burned clothes. Why? Well, Witt admitted that he did burn some clothes and shoes around the time of the murder, but he did so because he feared being a suspect once police learned of his connection to Jean, which in and of itself seems really odd and is really strange behavior, because what could the clothes have done? How would they have made the police think that you're a suspect? It just seems like very suspicious behavior, right? And despite this behavior, Witt had a solid alibi. Detectives also investigated scores of other people. They investigated quote-unquote sex degenerates, and they also questioned patrons of a Chinese restaurant because an autopsy revealed that she had some Chinese food before she died. None of these leads panned out. By late 1947, the case had gone cold, and in September of 1949, frustration with the rising number of unsolved female homicides led a Los Angeles County grand jury to convene hearings on law enforcement failures. The jurors observed that many women and children were constantly placed in jeopardy and decried the ineffectiveness in law enforcement agencies and the courts. After the hearings, District Attorney's Office assigned investigators Frank Jemison and Walter Morgan to re-examine the French case. They worked on it for almost a year, but they still could not identify a killer. I do want to add one little theory here, and this is a quote from the Daily News in 1947. The high alcoholic content of her blood, an autopsy showed a 0.30% saturation, told detectives Mrs. French was probably out on her feet when she was kicked to death. Police thus speculated that Mrs. French became pugnacious or belligerent with her companion, possibly a pickup in a bar, and that he beat her to death with fists and heels. Detectives were agreed, however, that the sadistic slaying of Mrs. French had no connection with the butchery of Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, 4 weeks ago. Several factors may have helped keep this case cold. First, the LAPD was very corrupt at the time, so much so that there are endless amounts of books and movies on the subject. Now, while there are detectives working cases legitimately at the time, the department itself was very inefficient because of a lot of the corruption and everything else going on. Second is competing headlines. The Black Dahlia case was dominating press around the world, not just in LA, and that put a lot of investigators to focus on that case over others. Third is victim blaming. Jean was portrayed as this heavy drinking woman who went out all the time and she made a lot of her own trouble. And in 1947 Los Angeles, unsympathetic victims, they're most likely just going to receive less investigative zeal. As for the mysterious lipstick message, its meaning is still elusive. Was it a reference to the Black Dahlia? Was it a taunt at the police department or a clue to the killer's identity. We may never know.
You've just listened to A Study of Strange. Consider helping us keep the lantern lit, illuminating the unexplained, by subscribing to our Substack. Just head to the support tab at astudyofstrange.com. Until next time, stay curious and stay strange.